Oh, it offends me to the soul to hear a robustious, periwig-painted fellow tear a passion to tatters, to very rags, to split the ears of the groundlings, who for the most part are capable of nothing but inexplicable dumb shows and noise.
Well, Hammy, you better hang on to your bear bodkin, because you're going to hate this. It's John Malden, your host of the Inexplicable Dumb Show, starting now.
Hi, and welcome to episode 601 of the Inexplicable Dumb Show. I'm John Malden, and this week I'm joined via Skype by actor, director, producer Jenny Paul, and she's going to talk about new techniques she's working with that are going to totally blow your mind when you're watching your little TV on your phone or your laptop or what have you, when you're watching video. It's going to be amazing. So we're going to get that conversation just after, you guessed it, these brief messages.
Would you like to be a pal of the Inexplicable Dumb Show? Why don't you head on over to www.inexplicabledumbshow.com and look for the Hosting Donations Accepted button. Press that and make a donation and help the Dumb Show cover its web hosting fees. Your donation is greatly appreciated. Thank you for your support.
Bad credit? No credit? High interest credit cards? Don't work from home. Working from home is for suckers. Go out there with headshot in hand. Audition. Book gigs. It'll be time well spent. At least you'll be paying the rent.
Here's how.
All right, IDSers, I am joined again on the 601st episode of the Inexplicable Dumb Show. So, welcome Jenny Paul to the 601st episode of the Inexplicable Dumb Show.
That is quite the number.
I'm quite pleased to get here. I never thought when we started it we'd make it to 600, let alone 601. But here we are. So again, you're an actor, producer, film person. You own your own production or work with your own production companies, and you've got things going on. So what's new?
Well, what's new? So I've got a few projects that are sort of making the festival circuit right now. The big ones are a series called You're the Pest, which is getting a lot of traction. It just went to the ITV festival in Vermont, which is a big deal for the comedy television people out there. And then also another movie called Dead Layer, which starred Cameron Douglas, Michael Douglas's son, is also mm-hmm. on the festival circuit doing quite well. And a third called Extinct, which is which was a film that we made for the Asian American Film Lab that mm-hmm. is actually premiering on the Asian American Film Lab's television network this week or this coming week on November 9th. So those are the big things that are out in the universe already. So, lots of exciting things going on there.
Well, cool. So, I feel like a neophyte with all this kind of stuff. When something is on the circuits, I know it goes to shows of various areas around the country, but what's the gain for you or the artist out of that? Just exposure or future projects, or how does that work?
It's kind of a little of both. It depends on the project. So, the series, the comedy series, their goal and our goal with the series is to get either the series picked up to have a bigger run with more audience, or it is to have the head creators of the series get signed or picked up by a network, which is, you know, basically the writer creator of the series. They say, oh, we really love this thing you did. Come create this other thing for us that's in the network system.
Okay.
So it's really about, these projects are really about elevating the creative team to jobs and bigger projects and bigger ideas that are, you know, funded by the networks. That being said, they all live really kind of interesting, cool lives on their own on the indie scene. So the shows are really fun and, you know, eventually we'll make it to Amazon Prime and some of the other more open source, viewing platforms so that anybody can see the content that, you know, the indie people make for any reason. And, you know, the better the content, the more people get excited about it.
So what about these stories? Cause they sound like there are three completely different entities.
They absolutely are.
What about each one grabbed you and said, hey, this is something I want to be a part of or help or whatever?
Usually for me, it's something, some combination of the actual story they're trying to tell and in the sort of the the emotional impact, the visceral impact that the story has on me, whether if it's a comedy, then it's either it's really funny and natural and well crafted, or if it's a drama, what kind of, you know, heartstrings does it pull on for me? So it's usually a combination of the story itself and the person behind the story. So I'm often hired on or asked on as a second, you know, as the second in command, as it were, the co-pilot. And so when I'm not the pilot myself, I make sure that, you know, the pilot is somebody that I really want to support and help them grow into their art and get those stories told as best as possible. So it's usually the person that has the idea that is at least somewhat the reason that I take the project.
Okay. So when you're not kind of behind camera in the office, so to speak, we know that you do acting stuff. So what have you got personally coming up?
Well, my big new project. So I remember I was on your show, you know, probably 700 episodes ago, even though there were only 600. So let's say 300 episodes ago, talking about my first series that I was the pilot on. So now this last few years, I've been sort of incubating a new idea for a series as I've been helping other people produce theirs. And the new series that I'm going to be producing this year is called Adulting with Jane. And basically, it's this really cool concept of it's a sitcom, and it is sort of a how-to video and a sitcom all in one. So it sort of unintrusively teaches millennials and anybody else who wants to learn how to do things they may not know how to do, but in a way that's fun and funny and is palatable.
Okay.
So an example of an episode would be Tim Gunn teaches Jane how to sew a button, like this. So they're little short mini nugget episodes where we have an influencer or somebody who is an expert in their field coming in to teach Jane how to handle whatever things she doesn't know how to handle because she's a millennial and we just don't know how to do stuff.
Right.
So one of the NASCAR drivers coming in to teach and his pit crew coming in to teach Jane how to change a tire. Somebody who is an expert chef teaching Jane how to make soup, this sort of thing. They're little quick nuggets. They're 2 to 3 minutes. And basically Jane runs into a problem in her day where, you know, the button falls off her shirt and she has that moment of, oh no, what am I going to do? I don't know how to sew. enter Tim Gunn, who says,
dun, 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 dun. Luckily,
well, exactly. We'll make it work, you know, and he teaches her literally just the simple act of how to sew a button properly in the next minute and a half. And then he magically disappears. We never really know why Jane has these magical access to these people. And then, so basically it's a little mini sitcom web series, digital series that has the influencers in it to basically teach you. And, you know, it's like a little nugget of information. So that's the project. And the really, really cool thing about this project is the tech platform that it's going to be using. So basically, a lot of people have seen out there in Instagram land that you can often see a little picture or something of a product, and you can click on it to shop now, and you could buy the shirt that you see in the picture. You could buy the whatever they're advertising.
Right.
They have just came out with a new beta technology where you can actually do that with video.
Wow.
So if, let's say, I'm on the production end and I have a living room in my show, and I want every single thing in the living room to be something that you can buy, perhaps, then I can basically do that where you can actually watch the video and click through the video and buy the chair if you want to buy the chair.
Wow.
Or buy the painting if you want to buy the painting. So this is new enough that what we're doing in our model, because it's very new technology and we want to make sure that everything's functional and working before we go crazy, is we're doing 1 to 2 products per episode. So you can choose to watch the episode just to watch it, or you can choose to watch it in shopping mode, and maybe, you know, 2 things within the episode will be purchasable. For instance,
wow,
the sewing kit that Tim Gunn uses, or the tire kit that we're using in the tire episode. So things that, you know, you may not have because you may not you know how to sew a button and you never did, but you can click through and actually get the thing that they're talking about and, you know, have it ordered to your house or whatever else. And so you have it the next time you lose a button. You not only know how to sew a button, you also have the kit that you need to do it.
Wow. Wow. That's so functional and marketability and inception, kind of all in one.
It's exactly.
Kind of crazy.
It's kind of this weird, like, you know, and for me, since the last series that I produced, that reminds me, I've been, you know, that I was the captain rather than the co-captain on, I've been trying to really find a way to make this content not only palatable for people, because, you know, people like watching series, but it's not something that they necessarily crave. They can go to Netflix and they can watch the stuff that's made for millions of dollars and that they can be done with that.
Right.
So, you know, getting smaller content to more people, but also making it accessible for brands, making it accessible for audiences, making it accessible for, you know, to me, accessibility is the key. And if there's interest in accessibility, then you have something that's successful.
That's
the story with Adulting with Jane. So we're trying to kind of innovate a new platform in order to, you know, make this something cool for everybody.
So you kind of mentioned about being pulled in multiple directions. Well, I can understand that, right? Because not only do you have to line up your expert for Jane to have her life crisis with for 4 minutes or whatever.
Exactly.
But you have to line up whatever product is clickable. So yeah.
Exactly. And then the production part of it, which is my personal expertise. So it's not as hard these days for me because I've been doing this for so long, but that's, you know, the third part of the Venn diagram is the actual production value and the writing and the development of the show.
Right. Right. So how big do you think this technology will ever reach? I'm like, do you think the potential is there to buy, you know, the Conners couch? I don't know why you would, but if you're watching the Conners, could you buy their couch? I mean, could we get to that point?
I think we could. I think right now it's going to be limited by, you know, if the Conners, you know, if we're talking about the new version of Roseanne, then assuming that whomever produced that couch is interested in selling that couch.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, let's say we flash back to the 80s. In the 90s when we have, you know, Roseanne 1. So if you think back to the first season of Roseanne, even the second, third, or fourth season, and you look at what's in the episode, chances are pretty good that the production designer picked out things that were going on and were available at that time, or maybe went thrift store shopping, or maybe found it in her parents' attic or his parents' attic or whatever. Mm-hmm. So the chances of us ever being able to go back to something like that and buy that couch specifically are pretty slim. And also, for a very long time, they were doing a really nice job of making sure that brands did not appear in shows
right.
so that they couldn't be sued by the brands.
Right.
That, you know, you may see that there's one object or two objects where you're like, oh, we actually found this and this is for sale by this manufacturer that went out of business 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe one thing is available.
Right.
So I don't think we're going to be able to see a lot of retroactive programming
right.
that has this function. You know, the closer to 2018, maybe.
Right.
That being said, you know, is it of value to the producer of the content to put something out like this and make that available for the brand sponsor? And, you know, how much work is it? How much, et cetera. So
right.
I think what we'll be seeing a lot of, assuming this technology is a viable one and doesn't have a lot of, quality issues,
right.
as it were.
I only wanted one of those. So, I don't need seven of them. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
I don't need seven. But, you know, that's also why we're doing one to two things per episode as well, is because, you know, that way we can make sure that the quality doesn't, you know, gunk up the works in terms of your viewing experience.
Right.
So assuming that the quality increases up with time and it doesn't actually do any of those things, I think you'll be seeing a lot of this into the future.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you're going to see a lot of this into the past.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
No, that
so maybe
totally
the
sense.
Newer Zan, when they go for when they go their next round, might have something like that. And again, like you said a few minutes ago, is there's a lot more work involved on the part of the producer of the organization.
Right.
So for me to get a room full of things that are buyable and sponsorable, and you know, instead of just decorating with thrift store shopping and whatever, in order for me to pay for that to happen and have it not look obnoxious into the point where, you know, you look like you're shopping in the Jetsons or something.
Right.
It's a lot of work. So, you know, I'm standing in my kitchen right now and I'm just looking around my kitchen going, oh, I got that picture in Italy.
Right.
I got that picture, you know, as a prize on a cruise. You know, for a raffle thing, I got that picture from my grandfather's closet, which he probably got in 1933, you know, and so I look at this stuff and I said, you know, what this means to me is I can't shoot anything in my kitchen.
Right.
Because if that's the mandate that everything has to be purchasable, I can't.
Right.
Like I couldn't do it if I wanted to. So then what do I have to do? I have to empty my kitchen, replace it with entirely brand label-y things, you know, have an IKEA kitchen or have a Williams-Sonoma kitchen or whoever the sponsor might be. And that does take away a little bit from the suspension of disbelief and the reality of somebody actually just living an ordinary life.
Right. And we already have that in product placement. Sometimes it gets so heavy-handed. It does take
exactly.
you out of the moment. I hate it when they're I watched, you know, some of the Chicago Fire and Chicago PD series, right? And so
uh-huh.
I guess Walmart is a big sponsor of that particular series. And so the firehouse always has that, I've just gone to Walmart, and kind of product placehold the bag that says Walmart on it. They didn't have everything I needed at Walmart. You know, it's like,
And you're sitting there going, really? Can we say Walmart five more times?
Yeah, five more times. We just saw, took my son out and we saw Goosebumps 2. And I was like, huh, uh-huh. Dunkin' Donuts must have sponsored part of this movie because there's a shot in the camera and the girl's trying to type her college essay entrance exam. And of course, right next to her is a steaming cup of Dunkin' Donuts. Coffee.
Of course there is.
Right.
And it's perfectly aligned forward so that it's, you know, you can
Absolutely. Totally
read the label. It's not. Yep. Well, that's also.
And then later on, they have a scene in a store which the actor stops and he's standing right in front of the Dunkin' Donuts coffee display. You know, why things are happening,
God.
Of course. So it's like, okay, can we have a little subtlety?
I mean, to one hand, you got the, you know, for a lot of these companies, they're go, especially the bigger ones, you're talking about the Cokes and the Pepsis and the Dunkin' Donuts of the world. Their marketing structure is not about direct sales in any kind of way. It's about, you know, marketing impression.
Right.
So the fact that you know Dunkin' Donuts well enough to have even pointed this out, that you go, I think this probably was sponsored by Dunkin' Donuts because I saw it kind of, you know, not so subtly laid out in this movie a few times, means that you've seen that Dunkin' Donuts branding so many times in your lifetime that you could even bring yourself to understand that that's what was happening in
right.
that moment.
Right.
And that's their sales model. That's what they want. They want you to keep seeing Dunkin', keep thinking Dunkin', keep seeing Starbucks, whatever the model is, so that it's on your mind enough that it's a legitimate option every time you go out for coffee.
Wow. Little do they know,
so
I'm a Folgers guy.
Oh, no.
No, I'm kidding.
I'm sure Folgers is happy to have your business.
Yeah, right. And I brought him up on the podcast. You know, the check should just be raining in here.
Right. So, but that's, you know, that's what their business model is with these things. It's not, you know, they're not super interested in your cup of coffee versus the next person.
Right. Just
they're interested in having this, you know, it's no press is bad press kind of,
and
obviously that's not entirely true, but
right.
So I think that's going to be a big challenge and a big goal of mine as we're building this out is that it's subtle, that it's there enough that it's actually beneficial to the brands, but it's subtle enough that it doesn't take away from the user experience.
Right.
So it's not like, please go buy this, you know, cup of Dunkin' Donuts over here. That it's more like, the person in the show doesn't say Dunkin' Donuts. They say, oh my God, I need coffee so bad. Right. And then all of a sudden you see them drinking out of a Dunkin' cup that's not perfectly placed. And he goes, oh my God, I love this so much. You know, and right. whatever that is, it doesn't have to be, you know, Dunkin' Donuts. It can literally, you know, be an integration that you have a positive understanding and experience of that person drinking coffee without it being like Dunkin' Donuts.
Right. And I think the setup you've got with the, especially with like the sewing kit, like if you show it and you show, hey, this is easy. It's easy to get the button out. It's easy to get the needle and the thread and get all, you know, everything is functional and compact and easy to pull out and easy to replace. And, you know, it's convenient in the action of your storytelling, right? That's far better than, yeah. like you were saying, hey, this is the Scotchio brand of sewing, you know, whatever. You know, and then having exactly. Tim Gunn sit there and hold it up, which, I mean, I like Tim Gunn, but, you know.
Right.
I mean, pick right. my own sewing
well,
company.
Tim Gunn is not signed under this show, but I like using that example because he's a perfect example of an influencer that would be somebody that's both exciting enough and knowledgeable enough that you could trust that his button sewing technique is exactly right.
Right. flawless, so, I believe is the word, flawless.
Exactly. It's flawless. He makes it work. So yeah, that's kind of the model there. And then, you know, from there, it's like you said before, it's about finding the right influencer to match the right brands, to match the right content. I have a team of about 10 writers specifically because they all have a little bit of a different sensibility. And, you know, a lot of these brands and a lot of these influencers have different sensibilities. Mm. So, you know, the one, and they're all sort of written to feature, you know, the interaction with Jane, who is a pretty, you know, is I am playing Jane, by the way, but it is a pretty, you know, average Jane type of person. Mm-hmm. So she's just kind of going about her life, doing her thing, and runs into something that's a pretty average problem for an average person doing her thing. Right. And learns from the best and then walks away knowing a little more than she did before without having to go to YouTube. which is what she would do next in real life.
Right. Sure.
If she lost a button, the next move would be to go to YouTube because that's what we do. or if it's daunting or threatening enough, we just don't do it at all. So I would go to YouTube to sew a button. That one I would definitely be fine with. If somebody asked me to change the tire or oil in a car, that would be not so much. I would be like, hey, friend that's a mechanic. Can you come do this? You know,
right.
It wouldn't be because I wasn't capable of ever doing it, but because I would be so scared that I would break the car or that I wouldn't put like a lug nut on properly or that, you know, I put the oil in the wrong can or, you know, who knows? You know, like something's going to explode and it's going to be my fault. And I think that's, you know, a pretty indicative feeling across at least the millennial generation and maybe the Gen Zs like a little bit below us is that it's not that we're not capable or that we won't. It's that we're afraid we're going to do it. We're going to kill it.
Mm.
We're afraid we're going to break it.
Right.
So, we all grew up with computers and we're afraid that if we hit restart too many times, that it's going to break.
Mm.
And we're still old enough. You know, I wasn't when I was, you know, I was 9 before I had my first computer. We know that they're breakable. So we're not too gung-ho on, you know, just kind of going for it. Like I know my younger brother is much more comfortable just trying things until they work.
Right.
Not so much for me. Like
yeah.
I would rather know what I'm doing before I do it and not destroy it. That
right.
would be
good. Well, I feel that way about the car too. Yeah. If I turn the key and it works, great. Turn the key and it doesn't work, it's somebody else's problem. You know what I mean?
If somebody else needs to help me, yeah. I'm gonna you know, and I also have I have friends, girls, guys, all ages, where I would say, you know, oh well, I don't know how to change a tire. You don't know how to change a tire? How do you not know how to change a tire?
Right.
You know? And I'm like, well you know, I don't. But I do know how to sew a button.
Well, there you go. It's a trade-off,
but then,
really, you know?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I know some of these things. I don't know all of them. I certainly did not know how to make soup until we commissioned our episode, and now I do. which is cool. And it's very easy, you know, and that's what I found is all these things have such much more of a stigma attached to them than they actually warrant. Like I learned that soup is stock, vegetables, and boiling. And, you know, you can add more things to it. You can do more things to it and more seasoning and more boiling and longer boiling and different vegetables and different chickens and different beefs. But, you know, at its core, it's stock, vegetables, and boiling.
Right.
I said, I can handle that.
Yeah, I bought my my father for one of his birthdays. Because my father is from, I guess, the generation that had to – he tinkers, like, and he'll – He built like one of the things he built was a catapult, lower scaled catapult, maybe 6-7 feet tall.
Wow.
Just to, because how does that work? Right. So he goes out and he's like, okay, I'll look at this, look at that. So he, you know, he's got springs and counterbalances and, you know, that's his hobby. That's his sport, right? I'm going to figure out how this works, you know. So I got him this book that was like 50 things that we used to know how to do, but we don't anymore, you know, and it's stuff like how proper way to change a tire, you know, how to start a fire with, you know, steel wool and a 9-volt battery, how to start a fire with, you know, I mean, it's just, it's all this little stuff that over time as things have gotten easier and more user-friendly and, you know, you didn't, and a multitude of things, right? So, like, if it breaks, then nowadays we just kind of chuck it in the garbage and go buy another one, right? But he came from a generation where that wasn't the option, right? And so, he's always, it's very fun to go over to their house and see what, my mother kind of rolls her eyes and like, oh, good, here's, he's got a crossbow.
Well, think, you know, for those of us, for those of us that are crafty, that's brilliant. You know, a lot of us, I can be. It's just not my first pick of creativity.
Sure,
But for those of us that aren't, you know, some of this stuff is not, it's scary. You know,
it's
not like, you know, what happens if you build the catapult wrong? You hurt somebody? I don't know. Maybe it's not that big a deal. Maybe it is. I don't know.
Well,
am I going to shock myself with that 9-volt battery? Maybe.
Maybe. If you do, I don't, then you probably shouldn't be camping.
Yeah, right. Like, if you're worried about that, that's probably not your thing.
So,
well, for me, it's not so much about shocking myself. Am I going to hurt somebody else? I think it's my main MO.
Right.
Which, you know, that's me specifically. But I think for me, I'm happy to, you know, if I don't think I'm going to end up in the hospital, I'll totally do it. I'm just hoping that I don't, you know, destroy anybody else in the process.
Right. Well, starting a fire with a 9-volt battery and some steel wool is very awesome. You should try it sometime.
That's really cool.
Yeah, because you just literally put the 9-volt into the steel wool and the current and the battery gives you a spark. Now, it's not going to explode on you, but it is going to, you know, lighten up enough, give you a spark that if you have kindling and that sort of thing, you can then put the steel wool into the fire and voila, you have a fire. So
that's great.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. I want to read the book.
It's got all kinds of stuff like that. It's just, you know, weird things that a lot of it is, you know, you just, it makes sense. Like you're saying about the soup. Yes. Step one, step two, step three, and then you've got the object, right? It's just that sometimes I wouldn't even think of step one. And then once I see step one, it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Total sense. So,
I mean, I no idea. Like the idea of making my own, you know, soup in a pot, the only avenue I would have to go down at that point is call my mom. Be like, okay, you know, can you send me a recipe? And she'll be, you know, she'll say like, well, there really isn't one. You kind of put stock and vegetables in.
Go by feel. I mean, come on. It's 100 generations of people have been making soup since, you know, beginning of time.
Yeah, exactly.
So as the series shoots, are you in production? Are you still pre-production? What's the release schedule?
We're still very much in pre-production. Most of the team is in place. We have one sponsor that I can't say because it's not on the dotted line yet, but we're basically hunting for other products that we want to weave into this before we get too far in, because we, you know, if we film a couple episodes, we want to make sure that their products are properly represented.
Sure.
Rather than, you know, like we said, I want to make sure that the Dunkin' Cup makes it into the cut of the show.
Right.
Rather than, you know, the Dunkin' Cup, whether perfectly coiffed or not, makes it into the episode of the show. So we're basically set to go whenever we capitalize the seven episodes that we plan to shoot. Mm-hmm. And then once we do, so, and we're set up to basically, if not all of them capitalize and don't, you know, then we can run it for less episodes than that, kind of go one by one. You know, I'd love to see it have an actual, you know, at least five episode start before we, you know, start doing one episode at a time kind of stuff. But
right.
You never know with this stuff. We'll see.
And so is on these series things, are they, is it what, I don't know what benchmark makes a successful series, something like five or six episodes? You go, okay, that.
I don't know that there's really a rule. And I think, you know, I think as much as it was the Wild Wild West 4 years ago when I did my first series, it's still that.
Yeah.
It's there. The success that, you know, usually you talk about success being monetization, or you talk about success being numbers of views.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't an answer.
Mm.
You know, I guess for me, my goal with this is to have a successful business that's operating above its operating expenses. So we're not, you know, the business not living hand to mouth.
Right. Right.
That's my personal goal as mm-hmm. having come into this, having made a web series that was fully Kickstarter funded and never intended to make money 4 years ago,
mm-hmm.
And make some, but nothing significant. But at the same time, you know, I think it depends on, you know, if people like it, and if it's working for people, if they like the comedy, if they like the platform, if it's, you know, it's seamless enough that it's not annoying to them, or it's even interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that's kind of where that lies. There's not a real answer to that question
mm-hmm.
in indie world, you know?
Right.
I think for a network, is it making money or not?
Right.
Is it selling ad space? Is, you know, are people still getting the Nielsen ratings? And those are becoming a thing of the past as well, a little bit, now that we've got all this content everywhere.
Funny story about the Nielsen ratings. Apparently, I made their list, and they've been hounding me to respond to them, and I haven't yet. But it was like four or five calls, and you know, they got that. And then you get the nice voice of, "Hey, this is so and so with the Nielsen rating company, and you've been selected." Blah 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 blah. Well, then you get two or three days after, and it's like, "We've tried to reach you." You know, the tone shifts a little bit. You know, that's very funny. But
oh god,
I don't know how I got on the list, but they've really kind of. They sent me a dollar, so I guess I'm obliged to do it. They gave me a dollar straight out of the envelope, crisp, fresh printed dollar.
Wow, that whole dollar. That's, you know, that's really you gotta do it now.
Yeah, and there was some pitch like, "There's more money involved. Can be more money involved," or something like that. So I guess I'll be filling out surveys. You might make $2.
Ha ha!
Put you in a new tax bracket.
That's so funny.
So,
but yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of, you know, it's anybody's game these days, and it's what's innovative, what are people liking, what are people not liking, and you know, my hope is that being a thing that's, you know, all of the above is not diluting something, but more bringing something to people rather than people being like, "Oh, that's cute," you know.
Right.
So we'll
see. Give it some value beyond,
value beyond its sitcomage, as you know, its indie sitcomage, as it were.
Well, cool. So how can we find out? Is there a website or something we can look up and find more about the series and when it launches and where we can see it? And is there stuff that we can learn about you, on your own controlled media, not widely Googling?
I am I am JennyPaul.info. That's me.
Okay.
And that has connections to everything. And the series is AdultingWithJane.com. Right now it just links straight back to the company, the back end company, which is my company that runs it, Intent Entertainment. But in the next probably 2 weeks, there'll be, you know, the logo will be there and everything, and a subscriber platform where you can subscribe to, you know, get the email when the episode comes out and that kind of thing.
Well, excellent, excellent, outstanding. So I'll have links to that and stuff on the show notes page for this particular episode at www.inexplicabledumbshow.com. Well, thanks, Jenny.
Thank you. This was great.
When guests can't appear in the studio, they are interviewed over Skype. Skype is a great piece of software that turns your computer into a phone. Talk computer to computer or to any phone or cell phone in the world through the Skype Out program. Interested? Download Skype via inexplicabledumbshow.com. Just look for the Download Skype button. Go ahead. Join in the fun. If you love the Inexplicable Dumb Show as much as I do, don't be shy about it. Go ahead and wear your feelings on your sleeve, or at least your chest. Head on over to our Cafe Press store and wear your support for the IDS proudly. www.cafepress.com/dumbshow.
All right, so that is that. I'd like to thank Jenny Paul for stopping today via Skype to kind of talk about what she's up to and allowing me to geek out on the technology she's talking about and kind of explore those topics. An interesting discussion. So, of course, all the information we talked about in the body of the podcast will be found on the show notes page for this particular episode at www.inexplicabledumbshow.com. Hey, do you want to be part of the Dumb Show? Then please do so by calling the voicemail line at 615-866-1282. Or put your thoughts in an email, podcast@inexplicabledumbshow.com. Or follow the show on Twitter at inexplicableds, at capital I, inexplicable, capital D, capital S. Find out the latest comings and goings and whatnot for the show via our Twitter feed. So next week, I think we're going to start getting into the Christmas spirit a little bit. We're going to have maybe a little discussion about what's going on at Chaffin's Barn Dinner Theater. So until next week, this is John Malden saying, hey, I'll see ya. Bye.
Are you a music lover? Then let Magnatune dazzle you with how different we are from the rest of the music industry. Interesting independent artists in diverse genres. Perfect quality WAV files in addition to MP3s and many other formats. Instant album downloads or traditional CDs by mail with free shipping. All this and half of every sale goes directly to the artist. So visit us now at magnatune.com. That's M-A-G-N-A-T-U-N-E. Magnatune. We are not evil.
This podcast is a member of the Blueberry Network. Blueberry. No E's. That's Blueberry, BLUBRRY.com. Blueberry.com. Pop Alternative Media.